Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Most Merciful, to all of our viewers out there, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon all of you. And thank you for joining us again in the Rational, the intersection of faith and reason, with our guest here, Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris. Dr. Ja'far, again, thank you for being with us, sir. Sheikh, last time we were speaking about, genetic engineering,
yes.
And you're giving us an introduction to what makes humans the peculiar or what makes them humans, mm. and the type of nature that or the mm. qualities that mm. we possess. And we were speaking about this relationship between the body and the soul,
mm.
and you said that in Muslim beliefs is that the body is different than the soul, and we were speaking about some of the qualities of both the body as mm. well as the soul as being special being as mm. it was created mm. by our creator Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we think we left it at proving that from the text that the soul is different than the body, mm. and now we're going to speak about the soul.
The
itself.
Soul. I think we don't need to go into the details of the nature of the soul, because in our previous episodes we talked and much of what we said was in reference to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
We said, for example, that a human being is born good, and by that we meant his soul. He's born good. He's born with the ability to know his creator and worship him. He's born with the ability to know and understand, has reason, has moral sense, and so on. In this respect, Islam differs from some religions which say that the human being is born sinful or with this sin, he inherits the fall or fall of Adam. No, according to Islam, the human being is born good, and nobody inherits the sins of another person.
Everyone, they can only be committed,
yes,
by that individual.
Yes. So we don't need to go into the details of that. This is we described this before. Now we come to the body.
Mm-hmm.
According to verses of the Quran, God gave the human being the best of bodies. خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. His body is better than that of any animals. Even now we are talking even about the body,
mm-hmm.
And because of this, even the body of the human being, according to Islam, must be treated with respect,
mm.
and the human, irrespective of whether the human being is Muslim or kafir.
Mm-hmm.
Once the person is dead and becomes just a body, then that body must be respected.
Hmm.
The
Sheikh, I'm sorry, but I remember specifically where the Prophet ﷺ has forbidden the mutilation of the body, even in war, as an act of revenge. What strikes me is where the Prophet, peace be upon him, says, كَسْرُ عَظْمِ الْمَيِّتِ
كَسْرُ عَظْمِ الْمَيِّتِ. Yes, that's a very good... Very
the breaking of the bone of a dead person
is, like
is as sinful as breaking his bone when he is alive.
And there's a hadith in which people are ordered to stand up for the funeral, for the, what do you call it?
Procedure for funeral.
Yes. If you see, if a dead body, a dead person, is carried and comes by you, then you stand up, irrespective of whether that person was a Muslim or kafir.
And here the idea is respect.
Yes, for this human body.
Hmm.
And then what you mentioned also, no mutilation of the human body. What is interesting also is that because of the close relationship between the body and the soul, some of the acts of the soul are attributed to some parts of the body.
Interesting.
Yes. When the Quran talks about the heart, it's very clear from the verses of the Quran, what is meant is not the physical heart. Because when the Quran says that that their hearts are blind, or their hearts
sealed
or so, or there's a disease in their heart, it's not meant that a person has a heart attack or it's very clear that what is meant is the soul here, but the soul is expressing itself. It's using this part of the body. One American doctor who specialized worked for so many years. What do you call them? Neurologist. He specializes in the brain, and I think he's a believer. So he said that after many years of experience, he came to the conclusion that there is something else that is using the brain. Not everything starts with the brain. There is something else, he said. Call it the mind, call it the soul. Something else uses the brain. So the brain, as a body, is only a means that is used by the heart. And I thought that this was true, because you can now close your eyes and say, I'm going to will to do this also. This did not start in the brain. Mm-hmm. And he made some experiments to show the difference between acts which are related only to the brain and those which are related to this other thing, soul or kudra. He said that, made an experiment where he stimulates the part in the brain which makes the hand rise up. So if that part is stimulated, you raise your hand is raised up. So he asks you, why did you raise your hand? You say, no, I didn't raise it. I didn't raise my hand. So as a human being, you make a distinction between the movements of your body that come as a result of your will and those that come automatically, as reflexes. But so he says, okay, next time don't raise your hand. And he stimulates again that part of the brain. And then when your hand starts to be raised, the person stopped it with the other hand. And then he said, This is the mind acting against the brain. So it seems to be very clear that when the Quran talks about the heart or the sadr, the breast, or so. But the question also was asked by many Muslims very early. Why did the Quran use the heart? Why isn't there anything in the Quran, or indeed in any previous scriptures about the brain? Because even at that time, they knew that there was a strong relationship between what goes on in the brain and our acts. I remember reading a long time ago a book on the brain in which the author said it is almost in all languages that things like knowing and willing and so on are attributed to the heart. And he gave some examples for example, in English, you say, I learned by heart, by heart. And his answer to the question was that language is based on experience. We don't have direct experience of the brain. we have experience of the heart. If you are, love or fear, you feel this in your heart.
Sure.
Ibn Taymiyyah had another explanation. He thinks that also the brain is involved. At that time, they knew this. But he said, in fact, the truth is that neither the brain nor the heart think or decide or so. It is the soul that does this.
Mm-hmm.
So his explanation was, yeah, just like this explanation of this American neurologist. He said it a long time ago. And so he said the soul has a connection with the body, and it has a special connection, it seems, with the heart and the brain and so on.
Interesting. Sheikh, we have to take a break, but before, if we can summarize this idea of which is to be given more preference, or I think you've said it earlier, that the soul is more important than the...
than the body.
Than the body.
Yes. But and the conclusion that I wanted to make, and I made in the paper when I read it, I said that because of all these, I believe as a Muslim that genetic engineering should be confined only to therapeutic purposes. Don't try to improve the human being. Resort to genetic engineering only to cure some diseases, but not to improve the human being or try for any other purpose.
Simply because we have seen that it's the best of the body.
Yes.
In the best.
This was the conclusion that I made after what I have just summarized.
Oh, how fascinating. Yeah. Sheikh, thank you for this. We will take a short break and we will come back. So please stay tuned, inshallah.
You have questions that bother you. What about issues of concern to you? Would you like to share things on your mind with us? Are you interested in solutions based on an Islamic perspective? Please join me live in Meet Your Advisor every Friday at 9 p.m. Mecca time here on Huda TV.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Welcome back and thank you again for joining us in The Rational, the intersection of faith and reason, with our beloved guest here, Dr. Jafar Sheikh Idris. Dr. Jafar, the conclusion that we came to before we took the break is that you've got the best of souls as humans, you've got the best of bodies. Genetic engineering is to be used in therapeutic purposes only, and I just cannot help but remember the harmony that you speak about between science and Islam,
yes,
even in this regard. The body and the soul are to be used for a specific purpose, and that purpose is the worship of the Creator.
Yes.
And I think that will be our topic for this part of this episode, inshallah. Yes. I
mean, you must have heard so many people say that there are three questions that naturally come to the mind of every human being. They say, where did I come from?
Where did I come from?
Yes, everyone wants to know, where did he come from? Why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
Where do I go from here?
Mm.
And they say that only in religions there are answers to these questions. For a secular person, he doesn't know where he came from, or you can only say if he believes in evolution that I came from evolved from apes or so. So why am I here? There is no reply. Where do I go from here? You are dead, you become part of the earth, and that's it. In religion, it says, where do I come from? You were created by God. Why am I here? To worship God. Where do I go from here? To return God. So the three questions, the answers to the three questions are related to the Creator. So when we say worship, we are answering the second question. Because you remember the verse in the Quran, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. I have not created human beings and jinn except for the purpose of worshipping me. So this is the answer to the second question. I liked the comment that someone made on this verse. He said that if the purpose for which we have been created is to worship God, this means ideally that everything we do should be an act of worship, mm-hmm. or every state in which we find ourselves should be a state of worship. So every willful act must be an act of worship. And every state, whether you are praised or insulted, whether you are put in prison or so, in every state you find yourself, that must be a state of worship of the Creator. And then I think another question comes to mind. That how do I worship the Creator? I have now known that my purpose in this life is to worship the Creator. How do I do this? Now the Creator helps him. The Creator helps him to answer this question and explains to him how to worship his Creator.
Interesting, Sheikh, yes. When you say that, because the statement that you made previously is so fascinating, that the aim is not to take time out to worship the Creator,
no,
but to make every time,
yes,
a time of worshiping.
This is the ideal. Creator. This is the ideal thing. Yes.
And you also said that a willful act, every willful act,
yes,
shall be like this.
Yes. Every willful act. When we come to talk about different acts of worship, there are different acts, two different categories of acts of worship. Some acts are prescribed from the beginning as being acts of worship, like praying in this special way, like fasting, like pilgrimage. No. These are special acts prescribed by the Creator as being acts of worship. But then every other act can be an act of worship with the appropriate intention. With the appropriate intention.
Of the person that is carrying out.
For example, you eat, you say Bismillah in the name of Allah, then your eating becomes an act of worship. You go to sleep, you make a prayer, your sleeping becomes an act of worship. You approach your wife, you said something, and then your intercourse becomes an act of worship, and so on. So every act of the human being can be an act of worship, either because it is an act that prescribed by God as being an act of worship, or because you made the appropriate intention and changed the ordinary act that everybody does into a special act of worship.
Sheikh, you remind me of a joke, if I may share this with you and with the viewers, and I hope that you would laugh even if you don't find it funny. But It said that a husband and a wife, they made a deal with one another, that the wife was going to be doing all the secular aspects or the material aspects, and the husband was going to be doing all the spiritual work in the house. And they said that 1 week passed by, and the husband ended up doing every single thing in the house. And the idea was that with the appropriate intention, everything can really be turned into something like this. And I think to our non-Muslim viewers out there, is this where that statement of Muslims come in, that Islam is a way of life, that every single...
This includes the fact that Islam is a way of life, but I think the broader meaning is that Islam tells you what to do in every aspect of your life. Every aspect of your life, what to do in social relations, political relations, economic relations, what to eat, what to drink, what do you do when you go to sleep, what do you go when you, and so on. So this is what is meant by it's being a complete way of life. But it is related to this, because when you become ruler, then if you rule in the name of the Creator, or name of Allah, and you implement his Sharia legislation, then you will have the best of reward. You will be worshipping your Creator,
even though it may appear as a political affair to other. To other people.
If you even if you work as a servant to someone, you are paid by that person, but you are sincere in your work, and you are a good Muslim, that your work for that person can be
seen as an act
of worship.
Again, I think I've used this word so many times now, this idea of no dichotomy between that which is personal, that which is of passion, that which is of this, and that which is religious.
Yes.
Sheikh, going back to this idea that you said certain acts in Islam are specifically prescribed, what do we mean? What do we mean by these things? We're talking about what Muslims refer to as the five pillars of Islam, or
like these, for example. Yes.
Yep.
Saying, for example, professing your belief is an act of special act of worship. Like when you say La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, when you pray, when you fast, when you do pilgrimage, these are special acts of worship and must be done in a special way. And only people who believe in an Islam will do these acts. But the other acts are acts that all human beings do, but they don't become, in their case, acts of worship, like eating, drinking, sleeping, and so on. This is the difference between the two.
And you're saying that with the appropriate type of intention, you can elevate these acts from being routines and change them into
acts of worship.
Sheikh, another question is, where does worship take place? The essence of worship.
Yes.
Where does it reside?
The essence of worship is in the soul or the heart. We are now saying the same thing. Worship is a mental thing, primarily. And bodily acts are expressions of these. Now, so just as the Creator prescribed for you the purpose of your life, and because He knows, and that worship, as you have just said, is primarily in the heart, also He guides you as to how to have this mental state of the heart. For example,
and you're saying that how to have a mental state of the
I use this mind, heart, soul interchangeably. And I want to emphasize this fact that the mind is not here, and the soul and the heart here. Many people now think that the heart is for things like passions and so on, and the mind is for mathematical calculations, and they call this the mind. This is not the mind, this is the brain. The mind is not something bodily.
Okay. So again, you're saying that it is that mental state, that state of the heart. Unfortunately, we did come to the conclusion of this part of the program, and we will continue this topic, inshallah, next time we meet. Thank you for joining us for this part, and we hope that you would join us again as well. Until we meet again, we say so long, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.